What's up, guys? This is Southwest Ohio Full Court Press. This is Tony coming at you tonight. I'll be going solo. Seth will not be joining me tonight. To answer your first question, yes, we are still a podcast, and yes, we are still friends. Seth and I took a little bit of a break, well, about a three-month break. You know, just took a step away for a while, you know, did life. Obviously, I was doing a lot with Prep Hoops Ohio, you know, going around, watch a bunch of different basketball, and we just kind of struggled to get time to get together. So I did want to put a podcast out for you guys tonight. That way you guys can kind of get caught up, because there's been a lot that's been going on since our last recording. The last time you heard from Seth and I, we had just finished interviewing Justin Bibbs to finish out our Local Legend series, which I hope you guys enjoyed. I know we both really enjoyed doing that, and hopefully the next couple of weeks we can maybe get back into doing some interviews and talking to some local players again like we did last year. But again, I just kind of wanted to fill everybody in, kind of what's going on right now, because there's a lot going on in the Dayton basketball scene. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, the big topic in the world right now is COVID-19 and how it's going to affect high school basketball and high school sports in general. Unfortunately, you know, we don't really know 100% at this point. You know, high school football, obviously, we're hoping we'll continue to look in the positive direction that we're going to have a season. It sounds like now a six-week regular season and everyone making the postseason is where we're going to end up, which is good. It's better to have that than no football. But obviously, you know, how football plays out and how the teams handle the any sort of outbreaks is going to determine if basketball can be played. I will say, though, that because Ohio was not allowed to do anything with contact sports, I was able to go to Indiana quite a bit in July, and I'm hoping the OHSAA takes a page out of Indiana's book with their AAU tournaments on how to handle things, because, you know, props to the state of Indiana, and, you know, especially Jim Ratz. I went to a couple of their events. You know, they really did a great job of kind of making things go smoothly, limiting the amount of people in the gym, enforcing social distancing, sanitizing. You know, they did everything we need to have a season, they were doing. So props to them and props to the state of Indiana. Because of that, it allowed me to be able to check out plenty of basketball. You know, obviously, my heart is in Dayton and got to see a lot of Dayton kids in a lot of different ways. But obviously, with AAU, got to see a lot of other guys from across the state as well. So I'll kind of dig into that here in a minute here, go over the AAU events I was at, as well as some of the showcases. We do have two local commitments that happened, a ton of transfers to talk about. And then I also had a question I put out a couple of weeks ago, kind of asking people to send in their own questions for a future podcast episode. Well, guess what? This is the episode you're going to get them. So going to answer a couple questions, and then I want to talk about some of the stock risers and some new faces that kind of came up out of these open runs and AAU events. So without further ado, I will go ahead and dive right in. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is just kind of some of the AAU events and open run showcases I was able to kind of watch and attend. So on the AAU side, again, you know, Ohio didn't give the okay most of July for any sort of events, contact sports. So Indiana had plenty of events. Seth and I actually both went out to the Indiana Summer Classic, which was the last week of June, the first weekend of July, right before the 4th. Really, it was mainly Indiana teams playing, and we did check out a couple of 15U and a 14U team out of Ohio. Not a lot of local teams in that setting. I will say I did get to check out Dayton Elite, who no longer is functioning, but was run by Will Holman, who's a senior. Shout out to Will. You know, having his own AAU team, he took care of uniforms, scheduling, coaching. He did all that. You know, really, really special young man with a very good leadership traits. Unfortunately, Dayton Elite did not last through July on the AAU scene, but did get to see his team play at the Indiana Summer Classic. A couple guys really impressed me. Bryce Singleton from Preble Shawnee, Cole Todd from Waynesville, Will Holman himself, Gabe Pavlock from Bellbrook was filling in that day. So really a lot of local kids stepped up. That team had a lot of local players with them. And then obviously one of my biggest takeaways from that event also was checking out Team Flight's 14U team. You know, one thing I learned from that event is that Trotwood has a lot of talent coming in that freshman class. Timothy Carpenter, Donovan Harding were two guys that really, really impressed me. I'm going to talk about another incoming freshman as well from Trotwood, but that team flight team was real, real good. And so that was kind of what I did at the Indiana Summer Classic. Took a couple weeks, a week or two, stepped away, and then went back out to Fort Wayne to check out the Brawl for the Ball. And this was really my opportunity to see a lot of different teams from across the state. It wasn't just the local kids in this event. Locally, Dayton Metro was in that event at the 17 and 16U levels. At the Brawl for the Ball specifically, got to check out Rhett Birch from Greenview, Trent Koning from Cedarville. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, but Abaki Kadari from West Carrollton. I apologize for the if I pronounced that wrong. Really gifted 6'6 post player for West Carrollton. And Dayton Metro, they put up a fight in the game I did watch him play against a good Indiana team. And but, you know, that was the one local team I got to check out. But really, Brawl for the Ball gave me the opportunity to check out a lot of high-level teams. Mid-Ohio Pumas, one of the better programs in the state, was there. Let's see, Indy Heat, I know, had a lot of their teams. Indy Heat's an EYBL program out of Indiana. C2K had one of their teams there. I don't think All Ohio had anybody there. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who all was there. But, I mean, there was a lot of good competition, a lot of quality prospects that performed. Gave me a good gauge of kind of everyone, some big stock risers, out of that event. And then, obviously, the last event I did for July was the Havoc in the Heartland, part of the Prep Hoop Circuit. Got to see a few more Ohio teams, specifically Midwest Basketball Club, their 17 and 16U teams. Again, didn't get a chance to see Dayton Metro play, but they were at that event. Ohio Players, their 17 and 16U teams were there as well. Really got a chance to see some good basketball. Obviously, Ohio Players, they pull from their 16U, had a lot of Cincinnati kids. 17U had a couple kids from Cincinnati. I think they had one or two from Dayton. I know Nolan Burney from Carlisle plays on that 17U team. The 16U had a couple kids from Aiken, LeBron, Barry, and Chance Davis, two of their best players. With Midwest Basketball Club, that's a really good group. A lot of high-level prospects on the 17U team. Nate Johnson, who's from Lakota East, one of the best players in that 2021 class, runs the point for them. Braden Sipple from Blanchester, you know, he's picking up some a few extra offers lately. I know Fairmont State was one of the most recent schools to offer him. From the local scene, Malcolm Curry from Wayne, who I'll talk about a little later, played on that team and had, I think, probably the dunk of the summer. He dunked over a dude at that event. Prophet Johnson from Thurgood Marshall. Both guys extremely athletic. Malcolm especially has really seen his stock rise since he this summer has started. And, you know, it was just a really good basketball. I was 16U. Again, a lot of Cincy kids, mainly Robbie Cass from Aiken, their point guard, was really impressive. Ben Sutherland from Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy, another guy they had. I'm trying to think if they had any local kids. I know Andrew Harp from Elder was a kid that, you know, you may not have heard a lot of. Some of these kids you may not have heard a lot of right now, but I feel like this upcoming season, you're going to really, a lot of them have been working on their game, and they're going to kind of see different roles. Those kids are going to be juniors, and you're going to see those guys' numbers really increase as we jump into the winter season. And then obviously with the one nice thing with, I guess, that COVID brought was the ability to check out live streams. And I think that was something I really liked, that I was able to check out quite a few teams via live stream. It's not ideal, but, you know, it is what it is. And actually, now that I think about it, it wasn't Brawl for the Ball that I was at. That was actually Balling Under One Roof. It was still hosted by Gym Rats, but Brawl for the Ball was the one I watched live, live stream. Balling Under One Roof is the event I went to live. So I just caught myself on that. But again, Brawl for the Ball, one of the events I was able to check out. I know All In Hoop Fest was the same weekend as Havoc in the Heartland. So I checked out a lot of 14 and 15U teams on that via live stream. Again, it's not ideal. And there's a lot of things you can't see in a live stream that you can see while doing an evaluation in person. but at the same time, it does. I mean, it's better than not watching the kid at all. So because of live stream, I was able to check out, you know, C2K's teams, Nova Village, Hobson Elite, All Ohio Red, TMBA, a lot of good programs, as well as all the ones I saw in person. So obviously AAU wasn't the only thing that was going on. I think one of the other things that has really gained popularity has been the open runs that are live streamed. 270 Hoops really started that trend a couple of weeks ago, and they've hit the ground running with it, and they're really kind of, you know, setting the bar for what you have to do. 275 Hoops and Triple Double Prospects did one as well for Cincinnati, and then the one I'm going to talk about here in a second, the Dayton Elite Open Run, was actually hosted by Triple Double Prospects Corey Albertson and then the team at Miami Valley Hoop Vault, and it brought together I think it was like 30 or 40 of the best prospects in Dayton together, playing in a live stream setting, and you know, really got to see some of the best in Dayton go at it. And you know, there's a lot of household names that you've seen before, a few names that were kind of new that really have kind of made an impact this summer. They got a chance to play against some of the best. Some of the guys just off top of my head from that event that really were impressive: Rich Rolfe from Centerville, 6'8" power forward. He listed as a power forward, but the kid is extremely lengthy. He can play on the wing. He can play on the inside. He's got a little bit more. He's gonna work on his physicality a little bit. That'll come as he gets older. But you know, he definitely is gonna see a much bigger role at Centerville, as I'll be sharing a little later with some news that just came out today, actually, about the Centerville basketball program for the winter. Lane Sarver from Tri-Village, you know, I will talk about him on my stock risers section, but this kid is something special up at Tri-Village, and that program has kind of struggled a little bit the last few years. They haven't seen a lot of success since about 2017, 2018, but, you know, they're back on the rise. They're young, and Sarver is just one of few many young guys that are really going to make that program rise in the next couple of weeks and years. Anthony McComb from Thurgood Marshall, again, as always, you know, really playing hard, playing physical, a great scorer. You know, he really impressed me a lot during the multiple open runs I saw him at during the season. The Dayton Elite open run specifically, he looked really good. AJ Braun from Fenwick was another one that played really well. He's one of the few true post players in Dayton, and he has seen his recruitment continue to increase at the Division I level, with a lot of low major schools going after him. As I mentioned, there were a lot of open runs. I know Flight Academy, Coach Render from over at Trotwood, kind of, you know, leading the charge on getting some open runs, allowing a lot of local kids to come during that month of June and play against each other. You know, a lot of different stock risers from those events. I can't even name all the kids. I mean, it seems like every week a different kid would step up. You know, obviously Malcolm Curry was really playing well during those events. I know Alan Lattimore, who is now at West Carrollton, who I'll talk about that a little later as well. He played well during some of those open runs. Makai Elmore played really well. Tom House, you know, a lot of guys. I did miss the one week where Malachi Branham came in. I was a little bit upset. Coach Render didn't tell me that the number one kid in the state in the 2021 class was coming, but it's all good because he did a lot to help those kids, Dayton kids, kind of get out and play against one another, and then they did a good job of getting, you know, the media in there to cover that. So, you know, it's basketball, and the kids wanted to play basketball, and it was a great to watch those guys play. And obviously, you know, the showcases in AAU were kind of the two – that's kind of what we had to go with in June and July. Again, you know, live streams wasn't ideal, but it's better than the alternative, which was no AAU, and these kids wouldn't have an opportunity. These 2021 kids would have no opportunity over the summer to be seen. And I truly believe a lot of these kids that did get offers, I don't know how many of them would have gotten those offers if it weren't for playing in the live streams and going to Indiana to play. So, you know, very thankful that the kids got a chance to get out and play basketball. Thankful for organizations like 270 Hoops, 275 Hoops, Triple Double Prospects, Miami Valley Hoop Vault, you know, Wildcat Select, and it was an AAU team that did a live run or live stream an open run. You know, thankful for those organizations for putting together good events that allow these kids to be seen and have an opportunity to get some college scholarships, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Speaking of scholarships, there were two commitments that happened. I'm sure there might be another one I'm missing, but these are mainly the Dayton area kids. One Division I and one Division II, I believe it was. Ben Knosman from Tippecanoe committed to Winthrop. That was it's a Division I squad of the Big South. Knosman, one of the bigger guards. He's 6'6". I've seen a lot of people talk about his passing ability. You know, he's got great vision. He's a great ball handler, good feel for the game, knows how to set up his teammates. He can score himself too. He's definitely going to, and I think he's got a chance to be a special player at Winthrop. And then the other player is Aiden Riker. He's committed to Mercyhurst. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I'm going to continue to say, like I've said from day one since I've started covering Aiden Riker, I think he is truly one of the best prospects in the city of Dayton. He's extremely versatile. He plays hard. He plays his butt off. And there's very few kids I see that consistently and constantly play as hard as he does. He totally deserves to play at the highest level, which was the Division II level. I think he's going to have a really good career. He's a great young man and a great basketball player. So, obviously, there's a lot of prospects in the Dayton area that still are going to keep getting looks, and will hopefully have more commitments as the summer goes on, or into the fall is what will more than likely be happening. So that's going to wrap up that segment. The next segment we're going to jump into here is going to be kind of the questions we had. So that'll lead us into our next segment, which is we had five questions that got sent in by different viewers, just kind of picking our brain kind of on some local kind of themes, and then as well as some scouting questions. The first question, it was actually a two-parter, came from Christopher Cross, father of Colby and Tyler Cross. Colby, who just graduated from Cedarville High School and will be attending Cedarville University on a basketball scholarship. And Tyler Cross, who is a 2024 incoming freshman and going to be at Cedarville, you know, really, really good player as well. His first question for me was, what attributes do you see in high school that translates to the college game? That I had to really think on that because, you know, that's something that I haven't really thought a lot about. But as I went kind of back and thought more about it, I really think when it comes to defense and being able to defend at a high level is something that has really translated over almost always to whatever level a prospect goes over to. The one that I especially like talking about is actually just from 2019 and Amari Davis at Trotwood. Obviously, you know, Amari, wasn't the most physically imposing prospect you've ever seen, but the guy was athletic as all get out. And one of the things I always talked about in my scouting reports for Prep Hoops was how long of arms he had. And playing at the top of a trap, man, he was almost always going to get his hand on a basketball. And being that good defensive presence, I knew that was going to play well for him in the Horizon League at Green Bay. And sure enough, I can't tell you how many times I watched highlights of him getting hands on basketballs, getting steals, breakaway dunks. You know, he played very well as a perimeter defender at the collegiate level, and it started in high school. And I could go on about other prospects I've seen as well that have defended at a high level. You know, I think defense is really something I think a lot of college coaches want to see. If you can, you know, you can guard your position, if you can guard more athletic players, that's one thing they really look at. If I had to pick a second kind of attribute, I'd say shooters. But that's not as much because, I mean, you got to remember that the three-point line from high school to college is substantially different enough that it does affect even the best shooters. But, you know, Jack Hendricks is a good example of that one out of Fairmont where the guy could shoot. He still is to this day the best shooter I think I've ever seen in person, minus maybe Luke Kennard from Franklin. And then you watched him at St. Clair when you played at St. Clair. And I mean, I think he set the record for most threes in a game. So, you know, that doesn't always translate over. And there's plenty of instances of guys that can shoot the heck out of the ball in high school that don't shoot it as well at college. So that's not always an easy translation and easily, transfer over. But, you know, I'd say being able to defend the basketball and defend your position is something I tend to see translate from high school to college. The other question Chris had for me was, when you're evaluating a prospect, what is the most common trait that you see that leads to a negative evaluation? And I'm really glad that Chris asked this question, because I try to preach this a lot to a lot of kids whenever I get a chance to talk to them. The biggest thing to me that you're going to get a negative evaluation from me, at least, is your attitude. And what I mean by that is, how do you respond to certain situations? Number one, if you make a mistake on the offensive or defensive end of the floor, you know, how do you respond to it? Obviously, if you're a guard, you're going to make mistakes. You're not going to make a great pass all the time. When you do make a bad pass and it gets picked off or it gets thrown out of bounds, do you hustle back on defense and try to make a stop? Or do you pout and just watch the ball get out and transition? You're a post player. Maybe you got the ball, bad entry pass from your guard, and you know, you're frustrated, and instead of trying to get back on defense while the team gets into the counter, you kind of jog back, or you just hack a guy trying to block him because you're mad that you thought he got fouled when you went up into him. You know, that's something, when I see that type of attitude, it's a negative, it's automatically going to be a negative mark on the evaluation. To that note as well, to the next step on that is being coachable, how you act with your coach. You know, I like to pick up on body language when a coach is trying to talk to a kid. Are you making eye contact? You know, are you acknowledging, head nodding, yes, no, communicating? And when you're communicating, is it like you're shouting at your coach, or are you having a conversation? You know, one of my favorite prospects to talk about that is Aiden Reichert, again from Jackson Center. You know, his coach is, you know, very strict, especially on the defensive end. And obviously, nobody is perfect. And, you know, watching how Aiden responds to being coached, that's something that I try to tell kids, that's what you have to act like. And, you know, the third thing is just your attitude towards your teammates. You know, nobody likes a guy that's a ball hog. Nobody likes a guy that yells at his teammates. You know, I like to pay attention to a kid, how he is communicating with his teammates. You know, is he picking them up? When he is trying to coach him, is he trying to be a floor general and help his teammate, or is he putting him down? You know, your attitude really determines a lot of times, you know, your evaluation. And a really good example of this, I'm not going to name the kid's name or the team. I was actually when I was at Ball Under One Roof, there was a player that he caught my attention, you know, pretty decent prospect, and his attitude came into question to me, and it wasn't even with his coach himself or his teammates. It was how he spoke to his mother. Yeah, you know, one of the perks of sitting in the stands sometimes is I can hear if a kid's talking to his parent. You know, and you always hear those different sayings, you know, when obviously guys, when you meet your girlfriend's parents or with a girlfriend, you know, you want to, you know, treat it like how you never want to say anything that, you know, you wouldn't want to say to your mother or something around those lines. You know, that's something that I take away too from this. Like, obviously how you talk to your parent is going to be kind of big, because makes me question, if you talk to your parent like that, how are you going to act with a coach? You're going to be coachable. So, you know, that's just, to me, your attitude. Ending this long-winded response. Your attitude, to me, is kind of the biggest thing I see that tends to lead to a negative evaluation. Next question came from my coworker from my full-time job, Jake Shook, a Fairmont graduate. And he asked me, what are some of the strengths and weaknesses of Fairmont this upcoming season? And are they a threat in the GWOC? So let's take a step back. Fairmont did finish 9-13 last season. Went 5-8 in the GWOC. Had some quality wins. They beat a pretty decent Centerville team and beat a Wayne program as well. Took a 1-point loss to Sydney in the opening round of the OHSAA tournament. And when you look at who they got back, they are very heavily influenced by their junior class. They've got really four main guys that they're going to go through. Malachi Parker, Keon Wright, Desan Doucette, and Anthony Johnson. Again, all of them are guards. You know, Keon played in the Dayton Elite Open run, and he really played well. You know, he's a great in the dribble drive. You know, extremely aggressive, extremely physical. Malachi Parker, kind of the same thing. I haven't seen him play this summer, but when I watched him last year against Alter, he was very, you know, very quick with the ball in his hand. found ways to score in a bunch of different ways. Anthony Johnson, he's probably one of my favorite prospects of that group. I believe he's actually from Lima. I'm not sure what brought him down to Fairmont, but I know Fairmont's definitely glad they got him. You know, he's not the tallest. He's under 6 feet tall, but, you know, he's working a lot on his game. And, you know, he's a good passer. He can score in doses. Obviously, there's areas of his game I want to see him improve a little bit, but him being a junior, he's got a lot of potential to maybe play at the next level. And then the other guy, Desan Doucette, you know, when I first saw him at the Flight Academy open runs, I thought he was a good kid, but there was a lot of areas I think he needed to improve on, most importantly on the offensive end. And he really worked on that this summer. And by the time I watched him, I think on a live stream for Hobson Elite, he definitely had improved a lot over the 2 months since I had last seen him. He's 6'4". He's got really good size. He's very strong on the drive, very physical, you know, a very good passer, makes good decision maker with the ball on his hands, knows when to get to the rim and when to make the pass instead. He really saw his stock rise a lot, in my opinion. And I think he's going to see a bigger role this upcoming year for Fairmont. And those, I mean, that's their big guys. So definitely one of their strengths, especially with a lot of those guys being sophomores and playing a lot last year. They were sophomores. They got that varsity experience playing against, you know, pretty tough teams like Centerville and Wayne, like I had already mentioned. And they got that experience. They got that, you know, beat up and got that physicality built up. Again, they're a guard-oriented team. You know, they like to play with – I saw them a lot last year. They like to play with four guards at times, especially, you know, Johnson and Wright. Those tend to be, I think, their go-to guys on the scoring end. And those guys definitely – you know, are going to use that to their advantage. They're going to be quick. They're going to be able to guard the perimeter well. One of their biggest weaknesses, you know, I think to me, is they don't have a lot of experience when it comes to interior play. And when you look at Centerville, Rich Rolfe is 6'8". I don't know who's going to guard him. Beaver Creek has got Adam Duvall and Gabe Phillips. Both guys are 6'7". Springfield, I don't think, has a ton of size on their end, but, you know, Springfield, extremely athletic group. Wayne, Ben Palma, 6'8", and he can play inside out. You know, how's Fairmont going to defend bigger kids like that? They don't really have a go-to interior presence from what I saw last year. Where I see them as they're going to be a threat in the GWAC, I think they're right in the middle. Centerville and Wayne are definitely the top two teams in the GWAC this upcoming season. I do think Fairmont falls in that middle category. Beaver Creek, while they have size, I don't feel confident with their guard play necessarily that they're going to be able to compete as much with Fairmont. And then Springfield, while they get a new coach this year, you know, last year was definitely an eye-opener that with the experience they did have, they still struggled a lot, and they lost a lot to graduation, so I don't know if Springfield will be up there. I think Fairmont's good enough they could take a game from Centerville or Wayne, but those two, I think, are the higher-ups in there. So Fairmont, to answer your question, Jake, you know, I think they're going to finish right in the middle of the GWAC this year. My good friend Lee Mowen, we've done a couple podcasts with him. He asked me if we had had a proper finish this last winter, who was the most likely to win a state title. So in Southwest Ohio, we had four teams that were still playing. Excuse me, we had more than four teams. Division II wasn't in the regional finals when COVID ended the season. Division I, technically not a Dayton team, but Moeller was the representative. Division II was in the regional semifinals, so we had three teams still playing out of there: Trotwood, Madison, Thurgood, Marshall, and Alter. Division III, Stivers was on a massive run and had made it to the regional finals. And Division IV was Jackson Center. So who was the most likely to win a state title of that group? Moeller, 100%. Taking Moeller out of the picture and just doing the Dayton teams, it's kind of difficult. Starting in D2, you know, I think Trotwood Madison would have come out of Division II, but it would not have been an easy run for them. Thurgood, I think, would have given them everything they had. And to be honest with you, I think Thurgood could have beaten and would have beaten Trotwood. They had lost in regular season by a buzzer beater by Sammy Anderson. I felt like Thurgood was playing much better basketball in March than they were when they played in December. I think that could have been gone their way. And then Alter was phenomenal last year. The three-headed, you know, senior trio of Brady Yule, Connor Stoley, and Jack Smith, they really played very well. They led that team on both ends of the floor. I think they could have been a tough out. But ultimately, I think Trotwood would have been the one to make a run out of there. I don't know if Trotwood would have won a state title, because I feel like that state semifinal, they would have run into Toledo Rogers. And Toledo Rogers was, you know, probably played very – for those of you who may not know a lot about them, they're a Toledo City League school. They are going to play very similar to Trotwood, except Rogers had several kids that were 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". I think Rogers would have ended Trotwood's season in the state semifinals, but Trotwood ultimately would have made it to at least the Final Four. Stivers out of Division III, they were kind of a unique team. Their two postseason wins had been against the top seed in Dayton, which was Anna, in the regional semifinals. And then they beat the number one seed at Cincinnati, Taft, in the district finals. Now, the Anna game, that was not an easy win for Stivers. In fact, if I remember correctly, Anna actually was, you know, in control of that game for much of it, and Stivers kind of made their run near the end. No way, shape, or form was it a bad game. It was honestly one of the best games I think I saw last year. But obviously, I don't know if Stivers would have been able to make much more of a deeper run. That regional final game would have been against, that would have been Deer Park, the number two seed in Cincinnati. And the way Deer Park was playing last year, I don't think Stivers would have had enough gas in the tank. You know, Deer Park had a lot of athleticism, and Steve Gentry Jr., Trey Munson. The one thing they had that Stivers didn't have was a big body. Anai Elliott, who used to be a Springfield player that transferred to Deer Park last year, at 6'7", one of the best shot blockers I saw last year. He would have been a problem for Stivers, no doubt in my mind. And then obviously Division IV, Jackson Center. You know, they were the best team in Dayton last year in Division IV. They had beaten Cincinnati Christian in the regional semis to make it to that regional final. And they won that game, you know, playing their style basketball. And while the second half kind of played in the Cincy Christian's hands for most of that game, Jackson Center controlled it. And that's something they do very well. And that's, they've always done well, is they make you play at their pace. And they would have played the Wellington school out of Columbus. I truly think, as good as the Wellington school was, they had several, you know, young players. It's exactly that. They were kind of young. And I don't think that youth would have been able to compete with the upperclassmen from Jackson Center. And I think the Tigers ultimately would have won. And truly, between Trotwood and Jackson Center, I'm not sure which one of those I think, Lee. If I had to pick one, I'd probably say Trotwood, just because, you know, even though I feel like Rogers would have beat Trotwood in that state semifinal game, Trotwood was just one of those teams last year. They just did not really know how to lose. Obviously, some teams did show them they could lose. You know, example being St. Vincent St. Mary at Flying to the Hoop. Not to bring up bad memories, Trotwood. But, you know, that Trotwood team just really was tough to beat. And I think it would have taken an almost perfect game from Rogers to beat them. So I'm going to say Trotwood to answer your question. Last question I got was from Alex Eich, who's a senior-to-be at Marion Local, also a guard for Northwest Ohio Basketball Club. He asked me, who was the best 17U team from Ohio that I saw this year? And this was honestly the toughest question, I think, because, again, I saw a lot of teams on live stream and in person. When it comes to in person, I couldn't just pick one team because, you know, I did see some of these teams more than once. And one weekend they wouldn't play very good. Other weekends they'd play great. So, you know, I didn't want to single-handedly pick one team as a result of that. So there was actually four Ohio teams I put down for in person that I think were the best ones I saw. Number one is going to actually be Alex's team, Northwest Ohio Basketball Club. You know, this group, most of these kids that played for this team are small school kids, Division III, Division IV, from Northwest Ohio, obviously the rural areas of the state. These kids know how to play, though. Just because they play in smaller divisions at the high school level does not mean that they are not good athletes when it comes to the basketball court. They actually, if I remember correctly, I didn't watch this game, they gave Spies Indy Heat, who I believe was undefeated this July. I don't know if they lost a game. They gave that team a run for their money and almost won. That Northwest Ohio basketball club's got a lot of kids that I think could play D3. Some of them could go NAIA level. They got one specific kid, George Mangus. If you haven't heard his name, write it down now. He's going to be a kid that will be, he's got a chance to maybe be Mr. Basketball in Ohio. He was putting about 30 points a game last year. He goes to Lima Shawnee. He knows how to put the ball in the basket, simply put. And that's all I'm really going to say about him. That's all you need to know is he can score, and he can score in bunches. Dayton's very own Team Flight was another one. You know, a lot of those kids individually, I watched them play during the Flight Academy open runs, but got to see them as a team play a couple times, and that's a really good group. You know, they've got a lot of quality players on that team. Carter Mims from Trotwood is, you know, one, in my opinion, one of the more underrated players in the city, and he runs the point for them. Other guys, Alan Lattimore, Chance Amerson, Patrick Ivory, just to name a few. Those are kids that play. I mean, this group altogether, they have a lot of really good athletes on their team. Tony Dixon is their coach and does a great job getting those guys play at their potentials. Mid-Ohio Pumas, Norris. The Mid-Ohio Pumas really impressed me because they do a really good job of just kind of focusing on the fundamentals. You know, you get a kid that plays for the Pumas, and a lot of times they're not just going to be, you know, the best scorers in the world. They're going to be all-around good players. They're going to be able to defend, rebound, score at will, as well as, you know, distribute the basketball. That team I saw at Ballin' Under One Roof. Keaton Norris, their guard, who is from Hilliard-Bradley, just committed to Wright State actually last month, plays for that team. Other kids, you know, Jackson Izzard from Jonathan Alder, AJ Mergen, another Hilliard-Bradley kid, you know, that just kids like that played for them. And then I think the last team was Midwest Basketball Club. I kind of mentioned them in my AAU recaps that, you know, that team had a lot of high-level talent. Between guys like Nate Johnson, Braden Sipple, Ben Knosman, Malcolm Curry, Prophet Johnson, Mauro Igatoye, excuse me, from Carroll. You know, a lot of really good prospects. And they kind of struggled at times when I did watch them play. But, you know, that's a really good group altogether. That's my in-person ones. The best overall 17U team I did see in person, though, without a doubt, was Indy Heat. Their 17U team with Michi Johnson, who was at ISA a year ago, transferring back to Garfield Heights to play for his uncle, Sonny Johnson. Michi is considered, you know, probably the best prospect now in the class of 2021 in Ohio. Him and Malachi Branham from St. Vincent St. Mary. But that team also had Kalen Etzler from Convoy Crestview. You may have heard his name in the past. He's been on that team since he was a freshman, and this upcoming season is going to be big for him. But, you know, Crestview plays a lot of the schools out of the MAC, you know, Fort Recovery, you know, St. Henry. Teams from up there is who they usually play against. That team altogether, those two Ohio kids, and then they have a bunch of Indiana players, without a doubt the best team, without a doubt, in person. When it came to the live streams, All Ohio Red and C2K Elite also had really good 17U teams. You know, again, it's hard to tell on in a live stream versus in person, but those two impressed me. And then NEO True Game also looked pretty solid. They have a lot of really good players on their team. Anthony McComb from Thurgood actually runs with them. Malachi Branham plays for that team. Jalen Billingsley from Lutheran East. Trey Woodyard from London. Now he's at ISA. You know, a lot of local kids, a lot of Ohio kids on that team. And just for fun, you know, the 16U, I'd say C2K Elite was the best overall team I watched. I saw a live stream of them. They did lose the game I watched from the Brawl for the Ball, but that team's got a lot of good talent. Quincy Simpson does a really good job coaching those kids. One of my favorite players from that team, honestly, was Danny Young, who's a point guard out of Shaker Heights. You know, really good guard. He's really seen changing his mentality with the basketball. A lot of local people don't watch him a lot because he is from Shaker Heights near Northeast Ohio. But, you know, that's just, you know, one specific one. 15U, I can't really pick. You know, I didn't watch enough 15U, unfortunately, in person. And even though there was quite a few live streams I watched, I didn't get a good enough feel for what team was best. Usually at the 15U level, I'm kind of watching more of the players. The 17 and 16U, because I know I'm a little more familiar with those guys, I can kind of focus on more the team aspect versus individual. But when it comes to 15 and 14U, it's more individual-based. So for 15U, I didn't have a team that I, you know, said this was the best I saw, but you know, like I said, 16U was definitely C2K. So that wraps up those questions. For the guys that did send in questions, thank you. I did kind of run a promotion where I said if you did send in a question, you'd be entered to win a piece of Southwest Ohio Full Court Press swag. I'll get with you guys kind of about what you have won. We don't really have a lot of merchandise for Southwest Ohio Full Court Press, so my only request is if you get some gear, please rep it, because not a lot of people know about us still. So, but that's getting off topic here. So that'll wrap up that segment. That'll take us into our final segment here, which is going to be talking about the transfer portal in Ohio. And that'll take us into our last section here, which is going to kind of be the transfer portal that is Dayton, Ohio, as well as some stock risers and some of the new faces to watch. Let's start with that transfer portal. So there's been a lot of kids that have transferred, and there's several names on here that I know I missed, and there's a lot that's going to happen after this episode drops. So bear with me. Please do not be texting me, "You forgot this guy, you forgot this guy." Well, I did the best I could. So without further ado, let's kind of talk a little bit about some of the new faces you're going to see. I did mention him previously earlier. Alan Lattimore is now, he's no longer at Stivers, now going to West Carrollton. This is really big for West Carrollton. They do lose Kalen McKinney, who is a Southwest District Player of the Year, one of the better shooters I felt like last year. Allen has the ability to really knock down shots, but I think what I've seen out of him this summer is that he's shown more of a scrappiness to his game. You know, he's not afraid to put the ball on the floor, get to the rim, and that's something I really think is going to help West Carrollton. They got another guard in Stanley Shrivers that, you know, he really impressed at times last year. Shrivers looks like he put on some muscle, so between him and Lattimore, they're going to have two guys that can get to the rim. Again, they got Kadari down low. They've got another guy, Sam Walker, a sophomore, a big 6'6 kid. So that West Carrollton team, adding Lattimore is huge after losing a guy like McKinney. West Carrollton's also getting Deshaun Ferguson, a transfer from Jefferson Township. Ferguson, I don't know a lot about him. What I do know is he was one of the better players and one of the better scorers in the Metro Buckeye Conference last season. Him coming to West Carrollton, again, is going to be, you know, another big scoring option for them as long as he can continue to score at that level. Obviously, you know, the Metro Buckeye Conference compared to the MVL, you know, the athleticism maybe isn't the same. So I'm hoping Deshaun can still put up those big numbers. And if he does, I think he can put himself on some people's radars and maybe some small colleges as well, being a good scoring option. Dunbar has several new names to talk about. We have six guys that are transferring over to Dunbar. Again, they just got a new coach in Tony Dixon, coming over from Thurgood Marshall's assistant. You know, we'll kind of go over some of these kids here. Three Belmont players, Randy Edsel, Anton, and Antone Allen. All these guys are sophomores. They are coming over from Belmont and will head over to Dunbar to play for Coach Dixon. Edsel, you know, from what I saw in the Flight Academy open runs and then watching them team flight during the Midwest Circuits live stream, you know, Randy's definitely got a lot of dribble drive mentality to his game. Anton and Antone, or I believe they're twins. I know for a fact Anton was, you know, pretty good contributor for Belmont a year ago. He's going to give Dunbar, you know, a good option on the perimeter. Antone, another one. I think Antone plays a little more inside, if I remember correctly from what I watched. But those three, Belmont's youth, obviously gone, heading to Dunbar. The other three guys coming over, it's pretty big names, I guess, in the local scene. Justin O'Neill, he really saw his stock skyrocket this summer. Was supposed to be at Meadowdale, transferring to Dunbar. The lefty, he knows how to score, and he's got a bigger build to his body. He knows how to score from different levels. You know, he plays with a certain physicality that I don't see a lot of kids match, and it's hard to match. Unfortunately, I know he got hurt at the Havoc in the Heartland when Team Flight was playing in that. He rolled his ankle in that event. But, you know, he's still going to really give Dunbar a good scoring option. Chance Amerson transferring over from Thurgood to Dunbar. Amerson's one of those kids, I truly think he is one of the more athletic players in the city of Dayton. You ask a lot of people, they'll probably say he's one of the best dunkers in the city of Dayton. I believe there was actually in their tournament, if I remember correctly, he tried to throw down like a between-the-legs dunk, or he tried to throw down some sort of sweet dunk against, who did they play against? I feel like it was Eaton. I think it was Eaton that they were playing against. But, you know, Chance is one of the more athletic kids. I'd like to see more consistency in his game. You know, he shows that he can really be a force to reckon with. He can really score when he wants to, but I need to see that a little more consistently, and I think he's going to see a spark in his recruitment for sure. And the last name's a guy I hadn't actually not heard of, Deshaun Lanthorn. He's from Stivers originally, transferred to Dunbar. I'm not sure. I had not seen much of him last year. I saw Stivers a few times, but he might have grown since last time I saw him. It's possible too. He's 6'7". I saw him at the Havoc in the Heartland for Team Flight. He'll be coming over to Dunbar, and he's going to give Dunbar some size. And that's something that, you know, all these guys transferring over are guard focused, and you know they need some interior play if Dunbar wants to kind of make a run through Division Two. So, you know, Lanthorn's going to give him exactly that. Ryan Chu, he's one of the better guards at Bellbrook the last 2 years. He will be transferring to Alter. He's going to team up with Jacob Connor from Alter. You know, Chu, one of the better guards, I think, in the city of Dayton. You know, a very gifted passer, you know, good ball handler, good court vision. You know, he's shown he can play in a half court setting. He can put the ball out in transition. He's a multi-level scorer. I really like this kid a lot, and this is a big get for Alter. I think that playing against GCL teams is going to make him more physical, and I think his physicality is something that was kind of my biggest question mark about his game. But I can tell you right now that he's going to have a good opportunity to really excel his recruitment at Alter. Max Scott transferring from Northmont over to Ponitz. Scott, more of a role player last year for the Thunderbolts, goes back to Ponitz. I believe that he was either at Ponitz before or he played for Coach Alan Spears before. Regardless, though, a big get for Ponitz. They've already got a good guard in Daywan Anderson, giving them another guy that can really, you know, step into a role of helping take some of the scoring, you know, scoring and guard focuses off of just Anderson himself. The last two transfers are actually two of the biggest names. I would argue the two best players in Dayton in the 2022 class, collegiate prospect-wise. Number one is Sean Phillips. He is no longer at Belmont. He's now at Yipsey Prep in Michigan, the same school as Amani Bates, who, as some of you will probably see on ESPN, is considered to be the next LeBron James from what I've heard, supposedly. Phillips, you know, he's obviously one of the most highly touted recruits in Dayton. He's got offers from a lot of high majors, including TCU, Indiana, Auburn, among others. He heads the Yipsey Prep after, you know, a pretty, you know, didn't see a lot of him this summer. Did see him in one of Flight Academy's open runs. You know, Sean's definitely a gifted player. There's definitely areas of his game he needs to improve on. But, you know, I think he's definitely, you know, deserving of being a Division I prospect. And then the new news today, this is fresh off the press, Keba Njai, the younger brother of Mo Njai, Centerville's giant. Keba is another giant they have. He is no longer at Centerville. He is now transferring to La Lumiere out of Indiana. This is definitely big news for Centerville. You know, they do have some size in Rich Rolfe, which is much needed. But the Elks have a lot of guards in Tom House, Gabe Cupps, Cameron Smith. Njai was going to give him that interior presence that could also step out and score the ball. Obviously, losing Njai, going to Lalomir is going to kind of help accelerate his recruitment, in my opinion. I think he's got a chance to play at the Division I level. I have made comments on this podcast numerous times that I think he's a better prospect at his age than Mo was. And Mo obviously had Division I offers. So Kebo, I think, has got a very good chance of playing Division I basketball. So that's the main transfers. Again, I'm sure there's more than those 12 I just named, but you know, those are kind of the 12 biggest names in my opinion. I'm going to close out this podcast very quickly, just kind of give you some of my stock risers. The guys that really kind of improved their, and again, what I do for Prep Hoops is a lot focused on the recruiting side of things. I do like to give, you know, a lot of extra attention and give, you know, exposure to high school teams as a whole, but a lot of times there's a lot of individual side of things I do too, trying to get these prospects seen for college coaches. So these seven guys are kind of the players that I think rose their stock this summer. Some of these guys I've already mentioned, so I'm not going to dwell on them much. Carter Mims from Trotwood, Anthony McComb from Thurgood Marshall, Lane Sarver, I said I would talk about him. Lane Sarver, if you follow me on Twitter, I said it on Twitter, I'm going to say it now on this podcast. By the time Lane Sarver graduates from Tri-Village, as long as he sticks with basketball, I think he's going to be one of the best players in the city of Dayton. This kid is physical as hell. He's a hard worker, can score. He doesn't look like the type of kid that could, you know, dunk over somebody, but pretty sure he caught a body, if I remember right, at Havoc in the Heartland. I don't remember if the kid decided to move out of the way or not, but, you know, he's got a very good athleticism, long arms. He's shown he can, you know, shoot the ball at the mid-range, can pull up from three-point if needed, you know, elevates way, way up, gets his hands on a lot of shots. You know, there's a reason why D2s want him. And I think if he continues to finesse his game a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised if a D1, a low major, kind of decides to start calling on him. So he kind of went from an unknown to me to a very known. Damonte Ragland from Trotwood, looks like he gained about 2 inches or so from the last time I saw him. He's 6'6". Saw him in the open runs, you know, really starting to know how to use his longer frame and his body on the inside. You know, he's so used to playing on the perimeter and slashing. He's still good at that, but I think that if he can continue to improve his interior side, work on his back to the basket and post at 6'6", if he can be an inside-out guy, I think he's going to have a really good chance to be even more attractive to college coaches. AJ Braun from Fenwick, again, he kind of saw his recruitment pick up at the Division I level. Igbaki Kadari from West Carrollton, very good rebounder, shot blocker for West Carrollton. I got to see a little more of his offensive game, but he's definitely gone on my radar. And I think one of the biggest stock risers was James Connor from Alter. Connor went from like one or two Division I offers to 10 total now. He played really well at the Dayton Elite Open Run. He's played well. Where else did I see him at? Saw him somewhere else in another like open run, and he did really well. Really, he's become kind of the face of the Dayton area. I think between him and Anthony McComb and like Makai Elmore. Okay, there's actually more than those three guys. But my point is, he's definitely one of the better scorers in Dayton, I think. And we didn't get to see his full game a year ago with Alter as a sophomore just because the guys that he was behind that were seniors. But this year, with those three gone and having a guy like Ryan Chu that can put you in a position to score a lot of points, I think James Connor could easily be looking at close to 20 points a game. Let's see here. The new faces, Delamar Blanton. This is definitely, actually, before I get into that, sorry, not James Connor, Jacob Connor. Jacob, I'm sorry about that. Football's on my mind right now, obviously. Jacob Connor. I said James Connor, Jacob Connor. on that last section. Again, new faces, Delamar Blanton from Trotwood. He is related to Carl and Tamir Blanton. This kid is already physically built to play at the varsity level as a freshman. He has very good vision. He can get to the rim at will. You know, he is definitely one of several guys from Trotwood that are going to be that freshman class. It's going to be very good. The aforementioned Tim Carpenter and Donovan Harden are two other guys from Trotwood. Both of them impressed when I saw them when Team Flight's 14U playing at that was the Indiana Summer Classic. And the last kid is Mason Strout from Preble Shawnee. You ask anyone in this Dayton area, Delamar Blanton and Mason Strout are probably the top two freshmen. I'm not going to vouch for which one is better than which because, you know, being freshmen, both of them have a lot of development still to do. I'm not going to rank which one's better, but I would say if you ask anyone in the Dayton area between Blanton and Trout, those are probably your top two. I definitely think Tim Carpenter is definitely in that talking as well from watching him play. So that'll wrap up this podcast. Again, you know, after a very long delay, I just wanted to kind of fill you guys in on what happened from May 31st to now, because there has been a lot, as I told you and as I explained. Again, thank you to everyone that kind of tuned in. And for those of you that provided questions, it's much appreciated. What's coming up for us? You know, Seth and I will be getting back to doing stuff together. I promise you will hear his voice. We've got a lot of big stuff planned. Like I said, talking about maybe getting back into the interviews, talking to some local kids. You know, I've seen a lot of guys going on Instagram Live. I really love the idea. And you know, obviously I enjoyed interviewing guys like Connor Stoley and Carter Gray last year, among a few other guys. And so I would really love to get back into that. So we'll probably do some of those. As the season gets closer, we'll get back into our previews. There are a couple other projects that I am working on with Seth. I don't want to share details on it just yet, just because there's still a lot of work that has to be done for it. But, you know, I think it's something that a lot of local kids will enjoy. There's a lot of things I'm planning on doing, statewide as well. As always, with those AAU events that I talked about, you know, feel free to go to prephoops.com. I've got recaps of all those events. The Indiana Summer Classic, it was more Indiana prospect focused because there was a lot of Indiana kids. But the Ohio kids, I did do a section on. Ball Under One Roof talked about some players. Havoc in the Heartland talked about some players. Most live streams that I've watched, I've done some sort of recap on. Especially 270 and 275 hoops is recaps. Feel free to go to prephoops.com anytime for that matter and just check out all of our articles. A lot of you know Matt Barnes, our photographer. You know, he is the best photographer, I think, in the city. He does a heck of a good job of what he does. You know, check out some of his photos if you haven't already. You know, and then obviously, as always, you know, definitely let us know if you have any certain topics you want to hear about. Again, I appreciate, you know, getting some different questions about just the scouting side of things, a specific team focus that Jake asked me. Obviously, Lee's question on, you know, a hypothetical from last season, and then Alex's question about AAU. So, you know, I love talking about this high school basketball. I love talking about anything I can with basketball, talking about the kids, talking to kids. You know, definitely enjoy talking anything I can with the basketball scene because it kind of helps with everything going on. And most importantly to me, it helps with the kids and it gets the exposure out. And that's why Seth and I do this. Again, I hate that it took us about 3 months to get some content out, but obviously it's very hard when this is kind of a side gig for us. We do enjoy doing this. We're going to continue to do this. I think you're really going to like what we have in store coming up. I do think that this podcast is one of the stronger podcasts. I think it might be the only podcast in the Dayton area. So we're going to continue to kind of lead the charge with that. So with that, I will say thank you for tuning in, and I will talk to you guys later.